I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. The rampage shooting in Newtown, Connecticut last month shocked the nation and raised a whole host of questions about how to reduce gun violence. President Obama vowed to make gun safety a top priority of his administration. He asked Vice President Joe Biden to come up with a series of recommendations, which he just delivered to Mr. Obama after a series of meetings with a wide range of people. President Obama is releasing his proposals later this morning, flanked by children who wrote to him after the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School. They reportedly will include background checks on gun buyers, renewing the assault weapons ban, and banning high-capacity ammunition clips. We have three guests who have joined us today in Radio Times, one after the other, beginning with Ed Rendell. He served as Pennsylvania governor from 2003 to 2011. He served two terms as mayor of Philadelphia from 1992 through 1999. And Governor Rendell, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
And Marty, you forgot two terms as district attorney.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I just, you're right.
Well, on this issue that, I started learning about gun violence as district attorney and as an assistant DA, and it's been a fight for me and many others for decades and decades, which is why it's so great to see the president all in finally on this issue and willing to invest a whole boatload of political capital in getting this done.
From what you know, and things are leaking out, and I identified a couple of what he's anticipated saying, do you think that goes far enough from your perspective?
Yeah, there are three crucial things that are going to be controversial. One, the banning high-capacity magazines, and I think that has overwhelming support in the public, almost 85%. That should be relatively easy to pass. The other, requiring background checks on any sale of gun, whether it's on the Internet or whether it's at gun shows, closing the loopholes that allow 40% of American gun sales to go without a background check. That is supported by 74% of NRA members and 87% of firearm owners. So that should be relatively easy to do. The tough nut, and there was some talk that the president wouldn't include this, but he is, and I'm glad, is a sensible ban on assault weapons and assault rifles. And they've got to reinstitute the assault weapons ban. They've got to make it better defined. It's got to include more weapons. And we've got to go all in. And if the president loses that fight, he loses that fight. But there's no downside to fighting for something, again, that 60% of Americans, I think the poll, the Washington Post poll, showed 59% in favor and 38% against. It's a 21-point gap. That's significant, very significant, and Americans support it. And people say, well, you'll never get that because the NRA has all this control in the Congress, and they're going to pick up some Democrats. I think they'll pick up a few Democrats, the NRA, voting against the assault rifle and weapons ban. But take Philadelphia area.
Sure.
We've got four suburban Republican congressmen, Charlie Dent in Little Lehigh Valley, Mike Fitzpatrick in Bucks County, Mr. Congressman Meehan in Delaware County and Lancaster County, Gerlach in Montgomery and Berks County. And the question for them is, and it's a question I'd love to see you try to get answered by them, are they going to stand with us, their constituents, and in those areas the poll numbers are even higher than the national average, are they going to vote for us, with us, the things we want them to do, or are they going to vote with the NRA and the gun manufacturers? It's as simple as that. And there's no sugarcoating this. Now, if Speaker Boehner tries to kill this by not bringing the legislation to the floor, then there's what's called a discharge resolution, Marty, where if enough congressmen sign it, it goes to the floor for a vote. And the question is, will those four congressmen sign a discharge resolution? And we've got to keep their feet to the fire. And I know on behalf of Mayor Bloomberg, on behalf of Gabby Giffords and her husband, and all of these groups, we're not going to let up. We're going to match the NRA's intensity ounce for ounce over the next coming months.
I was reading about after the Aurora shootings this summer, you criticized the president, you criticized Republicans and Democrats in Congress for not being more proactive on this gun issue and perhaps even being frightened of the NRA. Do you think things have changed for the NRA?
Yeah, I think two things have happened, and obviously the first was the killings at Sandy Hook at Newtown, because they involved, overwhelmingly involved, little children, first graders. 20 of them. And because they were executed, literally lined up and executed, one child had 17 bullets pumped into him. Because of the unspeakable nature of that act, that has galvanized Americans in a way that even Aurora, and Aurora, if you recall, a six-month-old baby was killed in Aurora in that theater. Or even Tucson, when that nine-year-old girl who was related to Dallas Green's granddaughter, whose only sin was she came to the shopping center to see her hero, Congressman Giffords, when she was shot, those didn't galvanize the nation. But this changed things. You could see the change in President Obama personally because they were children. You could see the change throughout the country, and it's not going to go away now. So that was number one, and that's an incredible impetus. I don't think we should have needed that impetus. Tucson, Aurora, Virginia Tech should have been all the impetus we needed. But that was change number one. Change number two is the awful performance by the NRA and by the NRA supporters, which has been almost crazy. I mean, when you listen to the comments of Wayne LaPierre, when you listen to gun supporters, you think these people are nuts. And they have been so bizarre and so off base and so out of touch with the American people that has driven a few people who may have been undecided on this issue to say, hey, we better do something about this.
Well, let me play a web ad. It was briefly on an NRA site. It was pulled down recently. But let me just play this ad, and I'll get your response, Governor.
Are the president's kids more important than yours? Then why is he skeptical about putting armed security in our schools when his kids are protected by armed guards at their school? Mr. Obama demands the wealthy pay their fair share of taxes, but he's just another elitist hypocrite when it comes to a fair share of security, protection for their kids, and gun-free zones for ours.
So, Governor, how do you think that'll play among the American people? And it was, I should say, up just very briefly, they pulled it down, which I think is interesting.
Well, it's so despicable, and it was getting such revulsion by conservatives like Joe Scarborough, by reasonable conservatives, that of course they pulled it down. It was counterproductive to their cause. And look, it's also inaccurate. President Obama's kids have armed security because the Secret Service protects them, as they do when they go play softball or anywhere else. It's not that his school has armed guards. Mm-hmm. And by the way, as you know, in Philadelphia schools, there are a number of Philadelphia schools that have policemen. And ironically, Columbine had a policeman. But you mean a policeman with a revolver is going to stand up to a surprise attack by somebody with a Bushmaster and a magazine that can fire 33 bullets in less than a minute? Not a chance. It's ludicrous.
Let me ask you about Philadelphia, as you were DA, as you reminded me, but also mayor of this city. Would you say, we've been talking about Sandy Hook, I mean, would you say that when you look at Philadelphia that there's a problem of gun violence, but it's not the kind of massacre that we saw that tragically happened in Newtown, Connecticut? This is a more day-to-day problem.
Right. There are two levels here, and you're right to identify them. One is the mass murders. And as was said by someone up in New York when New York passed its very strong assault weapons ban and high-capacity magazine ban, this will take the mass out of mass murderers, meaning that if Jared Lautner in Tucson didn't have a high-capacity magazine, which could shoot 33 people, remember, Lautner was taken down by those two guys while he was reloading. And that takes time. That takes 5-6 seconds to reload. Lautner was tackled down by those two guys during that time. If he had like New York passed this, a law that said you couldn't have a magazine clip with more than 7 bullets, well, obviously he wouldn't have been able to kill as many people and injure as many people. Same thing with the guy in Aurora who had 100 bullet magazine clip. I mean, so it's going to reduce the carnage. It's not going to eliminate the carnage. Nobody contends it will. It won't mean that mass murderer won't necessarily go out and try to do stuff, but it will limit the damage, limit the deaths, and that's certainly worthwhile when you balance it against any ordinary citizen's need to have an assault rifle or need to have a high-capacity magazine that has 33 or 100 bullets in it. So that's number one. But does it do anything about the day-to-day gun violence in cities like Philadelphia, all across
the
country?
With illegal handguns.
and most of them don't have high-capacity magazines. They don't use assault rifles. No, it really doesn't, but the background check is very, very important. 40% of the guns purchased in this country come without a background check. They're either at gun shows or on the Internet or in private sales. If we put a law in that says you can't purchase a gun without a background check, that will keep a lot of guns from getting into the hands of felons and juveniles, people who couldn't ordinarily legally buy guns. So that would be a step that would help reduce some of the availability of guns in Philadelphia. A second step, and I know Mayor Nutter has talked about it, and I tried to get this passed when I was governor, is one gun a month, a ban on anybody buying more than one handgun a month. And you say, well, why is that important? It's important because, again, almost 40% of the crime guns come from straw purchasers, meaning someone who's legally allowed to buy a gun goes into a gun store, purchases 12 9mm Smith & Wesson semi-automatic pistols, and sells them on the streets for a 300% profit to felons, to juveniles who can't buy guns in their own right, and then they use them to commit a homicide. Well, if you limit it to one handgun purchase a month, it would cut down on the trafficking, cut down dramatically on the trafficking. So that law, which Pennsylvania could pass or the Congress could pass, that law would be more effective to cutting down the day-to-day violence that we see in cities. But the high-capacity magazines, the assault rifles ban, that's to take the mass out of mass murders.
We have just a minute before I have to say goodbye. Something in the New York Times, I'm just quoting here, nearly 80,000 Americans were denied guns in 2010, according to the Justice Department, but only 44 of those people were ever charged with a crime. It's illegal to lie if you want to buy a gun. Is there an argument to be made for enforcing the laws that are on the books?
Yeah, I think so, and I think that's one of the things that President Obama is going to do by executive action. He's going to order the Attorney General to prosecute everyone who lies in an attempt to obtain a gun.
So do you think there will be, and this is maybe a more political question looking at Congress, and we're nearly out of time, do you think there's an appetite in Congress to deal with some of the issues we've been talking about?
Yeah, I think the high-capacity magazine clip and the background checks will definitely pass. The assault rifles, it depends. And I'd like, seriously, good journalists like you to ask Congressman Gerlach and Dan and Fitzpatrick and me and where they stand. Do they stand for us or do they stand for the NRA?
Well, Governor Rendell, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure, Marty.
And Ed Rendell served as Pennsylvania governor again from 2003 to 2011, was mayor of Philadelphia for two terms, also was a district attorney in the city as well. The first of three guests in this hour of Radio Times, as we anticipate what the president will say later this morning about guns. And we have Michael Resnick from the city of Philadelphia's director of public safety will be joining us in just a moment or two. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-9499. 8477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY is provided by Interact Theater Company and David Robson's Assassin. Inspired by a true football tragedy, Assassin opens 30 years after an on-field hit left a player paralyzed for life. Now his attacker is seeking a televised reconciliation. What begins as a careful game between the retired football star and his victim's lawyer quickly degrades into a volatile evening of stinging accusations and startling confessions. Assassin runs January 18th through February 10th. Tickets online at interacttheater.org.
During WHYY's last on-air campaign, members helped to buy back a half day from the drive. Wouldn't it be great to buy back a full day or more? For every 750 donations received by January 30th, we'll start the drive one day later. That's fewer pledge breaks and more news and information. Make your donation to support the WHYY buyback at whyy.org/support.
I'm Ira Glass, and we got a tip at our show, This American Life, this week that a pork processor was taking the very bottom of a pig's intestines, the rectum, and slicing it into rings and selling that product as imitation calamari. Can it be true?
I think it'd be about the same diameter and stuff.
quirky doppelgangers this week.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. In advance of President Obama's much-anticipated news conference later this morning, where he will be outlining his agenda regarding guns and safety regulations, we're checking in with three people intimately involved in gun issues and gun legislation. We just said goodbye to Ed Reddell, and now we say hello to Michael Resnick. He is the City of Philadelphia's Director of Public Safety, responsible for oversight and management of the Public Safety Division, including the Police Department, the prison system, and the Fire Department. And Michael Resnick, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you as well. And to our listeners, again, the lines are open at 1-888-477-9499. What do you hope President Obama says this morning?
Well, much like what we just heard Governor Rendell say, we hope that the president will outline some reasonable, some common sense recommendations that the Congress can act on immediately, much like the legislation that just passed in New York.
But do you think cities, whether it's Philadelphia, Chicago, we know has a high or had certainly last year very high gun crime rate, that cities require a different set of laws and regulations?
Well, the process would go a long way. That's why the mayor yesterday outlined the 20 principles, the Sandy Hook principles, because you know the legislation will get us so far, and as the governor said, that this will take the mass out of the mass murder. But as you pointed out, you know a lot of the shootings that occur in the cities day to day are done with handguns. 85% of the over 300 homicides that occurred in the city last year were committed with handguns. That doesn't mean that we don't confiscate our fair share of assault weapons off the streets of the city of Philadelphia, but the majority of the homicides are committed with handguns. So, reduction in high capacity magazines, assault weapon bans, that may not translate into a dramatic reduction in the day to day shootings that we see here in the city. But there are other things that we can try.
Like what?
Well, as the mayor announced yesterday, he proposed the 20 points of the Sandy Hook principles, and these are the principles that try to influence the corporate behavior of gun manufacturers and ammunition manufacturers, distributors, retailers, trying to sort of establish a baseline of conduct and reasonable standards. And you know, we're not talking about out on the margins here. We're talking about having a conversation in the center where these are rational, reasonable, common sense approaches. We're asking that gun manufacturers, retailers, distributors, ammunition retailers, manufacturers support these principles that will help reduce the inner city violence that we see. So, in by example, some of these are develop technologies so that only the true and rightful owner of that gun can fire that gun, to ensure that there are universal background checks, help to ensure that straw purchases are greatly reduced. I don't want to go through all of the 20
sure.
principles. They were announced yesterday at the mayor's press conference. I'm sure they're online. Your listeners can go take a look for themselves. But these are reasonable. They're common sense. They're rational approaches.
Well, and what the mayor, Mayor Nutter of Philadelphia, seems to be saying is that he wants to use the power of the city's purse, so to speak, to change or modify behavior.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we're saying that, if a manufacturer will agree to these principles, then the city's pension funds will continue to invest in those corporations. If they don't agree to those principles, then we will divest ourselves and seek investment opportunities elsewhere, because the legislation enacted by Harrisburg or the Congress can only go so far. These are another way in which we can influence the decisions that are made on a corporate level to have good, responsible corporate citizens that help protect all of us in our communities. Much like as the mayor announced yesterday, much like the Sullivan principles worked in South Africa and the McBride principles worked in Northern Ireland, he's hoping that the adoption of these Sandy Hook principles the threat of divestment will help influence corporate behavior.
Do you happen to know if the city does invest in companies that makes guns or manufactures ammunition?
I think based upon a quick review, I don't believe we invest or our funds invest in any manufacturers. We may invest in retailers, but it's as important as well. But a full analysis of that will be performed. And it's similar to what I believe it was last month, Cerberus Capital. They divested from the Freedom Group, the maker of the Bushmaster, I believe under pressure from their larger investor, the California Teachers Pension Fund. Also, Mayor Emanuel in Chicago, he also asked his pension fund to investigate their holdings. So it's not something that, we're alone with here in the city of Philadelphia. I think the mayor has broadened it by including these principles, and the principles require the manufacturers and the retailers and the sellers to abide by these common sense approaches.
And I do want to get to some callers, but the governor mentioned the problem of straw purchases, or purchasers, I guess, here in Philadelphia. What do you think, Michael, can be done to deal with this problem, whether it's one gun a month? That's what the governor favors. Other people favor, I think, background checks and things like that. But
well, not only background checks, not only one gun a month, but also lost and stolen. I mean, that's the issue. People will go into a gun store. They'll buy, as the governor mentioned, half a dozen firearms. They resell them illegally. And then, if it's traced back, then they say, well, I lost it, or the gun was stolen. I had a robbery and the gun was stolen. But we don't require people to report that when it happens. I mean, if my car gets stolen, I have to report that. Why do I not have to report the fact that my firearm was stolen or that I lost it? So those things will help. One gun a month will help. More stringent background checks will help. The things that we're talking about, it's been reported in the paper this morning that an individual in West Philadelphia confronted a burglar in his home last night. He shot that individual, shot and killed him. The things we're talking about will not prevent people from being able to defend themselves in their home, much like that person did last night in West Philadelphia.
And that's Michael Resnick. He is the City of Philadelphia's Director of Public Safety, responsible for oversight management of the Public Safety Division, and that includes the police department, the prison system, and the fire department. He's the second of three guests in this hour of Radio Times as we anticipate what the president will say in about an hour and a half or so on his proposals to deal with the problem of gun violence. Let me get some callers in. We have Justin joining us from Philadelphia. And Justin, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I keep hearing words like reasonable, common sense, et cetera, when talking about these proposals and legislations and stuff, and I largely agree with at least a lot of those assessments. I'm wondering where, if any, the hard data is coming from to support the hypothesis that these measures will actually help, or is it all just completely based on what we think will help?
And the idea of help meaning reducing the level of gun violence in the country, Justin?
Exactly. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. Michael Resnick, he's looking for evidence that this any of these things would work.
Well, as the governor mentioned earlier, I mean, he's quoted some statistics in terms of the number of guns that are committed or that are used in the homicides that come from straw purchases. I've mentioned the number of handguns that are used in the homicides. When you take a look at these types of things that we're talking about, they're not outrageous. Can't quote you all the statistics off the top of my head sitting here, but I can tell you that, the Second Amendment, I'm a supporter of the Second Amendment. When I entered my profession, I took an oath to uphold the Constitution. I am a gun owner. But we have a First Amendment. We have reasonable time, place, manner restrictions on the First Amendment, right? I mean, we still have defamation laws. You're not allowed to yell fire in a crowded movie theater. We have the Fourth Amendment that protects us from unreasonable searches and seizures. But the courts have carved out many, many, many exceptions to the Fourth Amendment warrant requirement. So this is similar to that, where there is a constitutional amendment that allows people to keep and bear arms, but we're suggesting that we impose reasonable regulations and restrictions upon that right.
Well, and not to get too wonky here, but Justice Scalia, when they ruled on the District of Columbia case a couple of years ago, talked about the right secured by the Second Amendment is not unlimited. And he went on to say that there can be reasonable regulations from the federal government and from state governments as well, seeming to, frankly, reinforce what you just said, Michael.
Right, exactly.
So what I find interesting is that when you look at some of the polling, and there was some polling done by the Washington Post, there was some polling done of NRA members, is there appears to be pretty majority support for things like background checks and for checks for the purchases of ammunition, for the creation of a federal database, for tracking gun sales, for banning even high-capacity ammunition magazines. Do you think there has been a kind of a shift on some of these issues?
Well, I think as the governor did mention previously, that the sort of the horror of the Sandy Hook massacre sort of, I think, awoken people, made them sort of analyze these issues and think more about them. What do we need military grade weapons in civilian hands for? Why do we need magazines that will allow you to murder that many people as quickly as your finger can pull the trigger? I think that people have just, you know, woken up, I guess, because of the horror of that incident, and reevaluated their principles. And the governor did mention some of the polling statistics in terms of the people who are in support of these measures. So, and these are reasonable measures. I mean, we're not talking about banning all sorts of weapons. We're not talking about the government coming to your home and taking the weapons that you already own. We're not talking about prohibitions on carry permits or things like that for people to defend themselves or defend themselves in their homes. These are reasonable, and they make sense.
But what I find interesting, a number of gun stores have reported that since the shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, guns, ammo just flying out the door. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, there's an old aphorism that an armed society is a polite society. You know, I don't know how true that is, considering the fact that, as you just said, that gun sales have been through the roof, but it doesn't seem as if we're that much safer. The mayor, in his comments yesterday, talked about how many murders have happened in this country since Martin Luther King was assassinated. I believe it was over a million. And how many homicides have taken place just in the month since the Sandy Hook massacres. I believe he said it was about 900. Mm. And in that past month, gun sales have soared. So, the country is not a safer place with the proliferation of guns. You know, I believe the estimates that I've read from the FBI say there are about 250 to 300 million privately owned guns in this country. And the more guns we have, it just doesn't seem as if we're safer.
Are police in Philadelphia outgunned?
Considering some of the weapons that I've seen in the firearms evidence room at City Hall, we don't arm our police officers with assault rifles. They have semi-automatic pistols. Some of our specialty units have those assault rifles, but that's not your normal patrol officer on the street. So in certain circumstances, they may be. Wouldn't want our police officers to have to come up against an individual wielding an assault rifle like that. I mean, we had a police officer, Stephen Lisminski, I believe it was a couple years ago. He was killed outside of a Superfresh as an armed robbery, and he was shot and killed with one of these assault rifles.
Mm. Let me get that. Looks like Carl from Somerville, New Jersey, to join our conversation. Carl, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My whole thing with all these laws they're making, they're feel-good laws, because the bulk of illegal criminal activity, the smart criminals, they don't go to gun shows. They don't go to gun shops to do background checks and all that. The smart criminals, they go to the underground areas. They go to the black market. That's not being addressed.
Well, I think we touched on it, but Carl, if you didn't hear that or didn't resonate with you, let's talk about it some more. And Michael Risick, does he have a point?
Well, I mean, what I think he's talking about is the straw purchasers. I mean, that is the black market, where an individual who is permitted to go into a gun store and buy as many guns as they have cash in their pockets can afford, and walk out and then turn around and sell those guns illegally on the street. These are some of the things that we're trying to tighten up those restrictions. And, as the governor did say, there 40% of the handgun sales are from gun shows that don't do the background checks. Mm. So that does feed into the underground market, and these are the types of, I wouldn't say loopholes, but problems in the laws that exist currently that we're trying to close.
Carl, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Michael, let me get you to focus a bit on the problems of gun violence in Philadelphia. The perpetrators, the victims, tend to be young African-American men. The weapon of choice tends to be a gun. It's often an illegal gun, and it's obviously dealing with conflicts or misunderstandings or disrespect. How does a city like Philadelphia deal with that?
Yeah, it's a huge problem, right? As you mentioned, the victims and the perpetrators tend to be overwhelmingly African-American young men. 85% of the homicides are done with a handgun. They are generally tend to be illegal, purchased through straw purchasers or, you know, repurchased through the black market, as a previous caller mentioned. There are many ways that we try to deal with that. The mayor has announced, I believe it was probably this week, last year, his crime strategy, where we went through several principles in terms of more money for victim witness protection, reward money for people who give us information that leads to the arrest and conviction of folks with illegal guns, rewards for arrest and conviction of homicides. We have Ceasefire Pennsylvania, which is Ceasefire, which is a program that operates out in North Philadelphia. We're working with the district attorney to implement some more violence prevention programs in other parts of the city. We have several of the criminal justice partners in the city are working with the city, and we're working with the federal government Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Programs and a violence prevention program here in the city. So there are a lot of things that we're trying, and the mayor's office will be rolling out some more violence prevention initiatives as we go into the year. But, you know, there are many things that we're attempting to try to end the gun violence.
Well, let me get one more caller in, then we're going to get our third guest to join us, Michael. Let me get Zach from Cape May, New Jersey, to join us on Radio Times. Zach, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just have a quick comment. Basically, I haven't heard a lot of people talk about allowing victims of gun violence to sue homeowners insurance. I feel that with the Second Amendment being such a tough, touchy issue for politicians and lawmakers, allowing victims of gun violence to sue the homeowners insurance of the person who owned the gun, I believe would cut down a lot on basically people being able to get guns. And I just wanted to get your comment on that. I would compare this to like a dog bite, people being victims of that. Thank you very much.
Zach, thanks for the call to Radio Times. What are your thoughts, Michael?
Yeah, I guess if you were able to trace the gun, once we recovered the gun, trace it back to the original owner who bought it legally, you know, I don't see a problem with why you wouldn't be able to sue that individual if they had not reported their firearm lost or stolen or took better care to prevent it from getting into the hands of somebody who was going to use it to commit a violent crime.
So do you think we're at a turning point?
I think so. I think so. I'm, you know, excited for the president's announcement today. I think, you know, there's a lot of momentum behind it. I think what the mayor announced yesterday in terms of the Sandy Hook principles, and he's going to take that to the U.S. Conference of Mayors, where he is the president, and try to rally the country's mayors behind this sort of thing and the adoption of the Sandy Hook principles. I think, you know, not only on a legislative side, but also on a policy side, we're going to see some change.
Well, Michael Resnick, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
You're welcome.
And he's the City of Philadelphia's Director of Public Safety, responsible for oversight and management of the Public Safety Division. And as I mentioned before, that includes the police department, the prison system, and the fire department. We'll be talking with Dan Baum in just a moment or two. We're going to take a very short break and get back to our callers as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY, talking about what to do about guns. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Morristown Friends School proudly supports WHYY and is hosting an admissions open house on Sunday, January 27th at 2 p.m. Founded in 1785, Morristown Friends offers rigorous academics coupled with a spiritual and ethical education program for students in preschool through grade 12. More information, multimedia, and all open house dates can be found online at mfsopportunities.org.
On The Next Humankind, we examine how the American civil rights movement strove not only for equality, but also to change the hearts of opponents through nonviolent protest. And a visit with Dr. Arun Gandhi, grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, who deeply influenced Martin Luther King.
Next time on Humankind.
Monday night at 11 on WHYY.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. A woman who survived a 1991 shooting massacre but lost her parents says if she had her gun, lives would have been saved. She makes an impassioned plea for carrying a gun. Also, writer Nick Flynn on what it was like to see the worst moments of his life, his father's homelessness, his mother's suicide, played out on film. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. President Obama is going to unveil his much-anticipated proposal later this morning to reduce gun violence in the wake of the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut last month. We'll be getting three perspectives today on Radio Times with about guns. And joining us now is Dan Baum. He's an author, gun owner, about to publish a book titled Gun Guys, a road trip, which had him talking with gun owners and sellers visiting shows around the country, including this week at the Las Vegas Gun Show. And Dan Baum, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you very much for having me.
So what's the mood at the Las Vegas Gun Show today or this week?
Well, this is the firearms industry trade show, so it's all business. It's not much politics. But what is really striking, and I knew this from driving around the country, but in this whole debate since Sandy Hook, there's been a lot of talk about who would need an AR-15 rifle. That's the gun that Adam Lanza used and that James Holmes allegedly used in the Aurora shooting. Who would need a gun like that? Why does anybody need a gun like that? And I was reminded walking around the firearms industry trade show that it is the only gun anybody is buying.
Right.
It is the centerpiece of the gun business. This is an enormous show, and almost all of it is devoted to the AR-15 rifle, accessories for the AR-15, parts. It's the most popular gun in America. It is not some kind of bizarre outlier that only bad people would want to have. It is the absolute mainstream of the gun business. And it was kind of striking to be reminded of that walking around the show.
Well, what I found interesting, and you're probably seeing it there in Las Vegas, is and all these gun stores in the Pennsylvania area or the Philadelphia area, gun stores across the country, they cannot keep guns and ammo in their stores because people are coming in and just cleaning them out.
Right, because people are afraid that they'll be banned. It is interesting. People here were telling me that the makers of the AR-15 and parts, that there's not many new products this year, that people are concentrating on moving out the inventory that they've got because they don't know if this business will be around in another year. People are definitely worried about that, and it apparently has affected the product line. But this rifle is so central to the gun business, is so enormously profitable and popular. I'm not quite sure that that's appreciated by those who are talking about banning them. I mean, it's not a fringe thing. It is the absolute centerpiece of the gun business. So if you're seeing a strong reaction against bans, that's it. I mean, there's a lot of money involved here.
But how did this gun go so mainstream then? Because this is a relatively new gun.
Well, it is. I mean, some people say that it became really popular in the last assault rifle ban. Anything forbidden becomes popular. It's also really an extraordinary piece of engineering. I mean, I don't own one. I don't particularly like them. I'm an old gun guy, so I'm not really making the case for them personally. But they are, there's very little recoil. They're extremely accurate. They're easy to take care of. They are lightweight. As a piece of engineering, just looking at it, if you can forget the lethality for a moment, just as a piece of engineering, they're amazing. And they're modular. You can take them apart like a Lego toy, so you can endlessly be swapping out components on it. You can even change the caliber on your gun very quickly. So that just makes it, for gearheads, it's enormously attractive, and you can imagine how profitable it is because there's always some new thing to buy for your gun, and that's what this whole show is about today, is all of this cool stuff that people can buy for their AR-15, and people use them for hunting, and they use them for all kinds of other shooting.
From your perspective as a gun owner and someone that has talked to a lot of gun owners and have gone to a lot of gun shows, what would you support as I guess, responsible legislation or even regulations that also honors the Second Amendment?
You know, I'm not much of a policy guy, but I think gun owners, from what I hear, gun owners, all gun owners, responsible gun owners, and most are, believe that people should be locking up their guns. And a lot of people believe that it's, you know, perfectly okay to require people to lock up their guns. And because that's, a lot of the bad stuff happens with guns that people leave lying around. And it is appalling how many people leave guns lying around where kids can find them and burglars can find them. You know, background checks, there is a small group of the gun community that objects to background checks, but most don't. We all live with background checks in gun stores, and if there was some convenient way to run all gun purchases through background checks, perhaps by putting the computerized background check system online where everybody could access it, so you don't have to drive to a gun store and pay $25 for the background check, but you could do it yourself. There are ways to make the country safer. The tragedy is that we're so polarized. The people who know guns best and would have the best ideas about how to make the country safer from guns are the gun guys. But the policymakers have made enemies of the gun guys by talking about bans. So the two sides are screaming at each other when really they all want the same thing, which is fewer gun deaths. I mean, the gun guys are not advocating more gun deaths. They have their ideas about how we could make the country safer, and we don't have access to their ideas because we are so polarized, and we've made enemies of them instead of allies. I mean, if lots of people were drowning in pools or drowning in boats, we'd be going to boat guys, and we'd be asking people who are familiar with the water, how can we make, playing in the water safer? We're not accessing the expertise of gun guys in this debate because we've made enemies of them.
Well, let me ask you, and that's a provocative thing. We could do a whole hour about that. And I have to say, we were looking for gun guys like yourself to talk about, you know, some kind of reasonable way that we could talk about guns. And I wonder whether you think the NRA represents your perspective.
I think the NRA is a hideous organization, and no, it does not. And look, there may be 100 million gun owners in the United States. NRA only has 4 million members. The NRA represents a tiny little slice of the gun-owning community. They're nasty, they're scary, they're extreme, and a lot of gun owners don't want anything to do with them. The majority, the vast majority, 96% of gun owners don't want anything to do with them, precisely because of that. So this idea that the NRA represents the views of gun owners is nonsense. They don't.
But is that an argument then for people like you to start a counter organization to move in some kind of better direction on this?
You know, the NRA was taken over by the crazies in 1977 at the board meeting in Cincinnati in 1977. Until 1977, the NRA was a marksmanship and safety organization, and it became this modern institution in 1977. I would love to see, you know, the good people take the NRA back from this extremist wing. It's not something we talk about much in the, you know, we gun owners, it's kind of heresy to talk about it because gun owners feel besieged by this talk of bans and whatnot. And so everybody is kind of torqued out of shape emotionally because this issue is so emotional and divisive. If you talk about, you know, taking over the NRA or a more reasonable gun owners association, you know, the first thing gun owners say is, yeah, but, you know, they want to take away our guns.
Mm.
And I got to say, I am a tax and spend Democrat. I am a lifelong liberal Democrat. And what I worry about is that my party is driving, you know, so many millions of Americans into the arms of the other party by talking about things like bans that really won't make us any safer. And there are things we could do that would make us safer. So I'm kind of tortured by what's going on.
And the idea that there are calls for an assault weapons ban, that that's enough to get gun owners to think that the government is going to take their guns away?
Well, you know, Governor Cuomo in New York just signed a law that, you know, is going to make criminals of law-abiding Americans who hold on to the property that they've got, their large magazine, their large capacity magazines. If you don't hand them in or send them out of state, you will be a criminal. That's really scary to gun guys. And, you know, Bill Clinton in his biography attributes the loss of both houses of Congress in 1994 in large part to the assault rifle ban. So I'm always asking my Democrat friends, okay, you want to ban assault weapons or you want to ban large capacity magazines, what is it worth to you? What are you willing to trade away? We had a chance of taking the House in 2014. You know, are you willing to trade that away? I think there are political consequences to the rhetoric and to the policies.
Let me get some callers in. We have Clay. Looks like Clay from Philadelphia joining us on Radio Times. Clay, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm about as left-wing as you can get, but I think I'm becoming a bit more right-wing. I think we're putting a Band-Aid on a larger problem by trying to ban these guns or ban assault weapons or ban, you know, large magazines. I think we need to talk about the kind of society we have that produces people that go crazy and shoot up a lot of people. I mean, we have Canada to the north that's a totally different society, a politer society than we are. They don't have half the problems we do. And number two, the other approach I'd like to see is somebody put the same amount of money behind mental health as you put in this war we fought overseas the last 10 years. I think we should do this before we start talking about any kind of ban, because they're right. Guns don't kill people. Crazy people kill people.
We need to
look at that problem.
I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I would be careful, though, making a blanket statement that crazy people kill people. I mean, clearly some crazy people have done that. And there is talk about looking at our mental health system. And does that make sense to you, Dan Baum?
It does, provided, I mean, I was talking to a civil libertarian friend of mine who said, you know, we really don't want to be making databases of people with mental health problems, you know, because for one thing, we don't want to drive people away from getting help. If they think their name is going to end up in a database, might make it hard for them to get health insurance, for example, or might have other consequences. I think it's not my area of expertise, right, but it's something that, you know, clearly has got to be examined, but I hope it will be examined in a thoughtful way.
Well, let me get John from, it looks like, Chambersburg to join us. Clay, thanks for the call. John, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Question from your guest, from one gun owner to another, and I bought basically all my guns before the previous assault weapons ban and that went into effect in whatever it was, 93, 94. I don't see a way, if you want to minimize mass shootings, to do anything other than ban all semi-automatics. And second, I don't see a real way to ban to significantly limit urban homicides without banning handguns. And I wondered, since he does sound he's somewhat in favor of those, can you give me a good argument as to what is the social utility, what is the social benefit of permitting private ownership of handguns? You know, not that it would be politically difficult to ban them at this point. We know about the Supreme Court decision in D.C., but I don't really know, even though I own them, what is the purpose for a handgun other than to kill somebody?
Well, do you go to target shooting? I mean, do you
target shooting versus the number of handgun deaths we have in our cities. I mean, I don't live near Philly anymore, but I used to.
Right.
And I would say that 85-90% of the gun deaths in Philadelphia, you know, homicide by firearm, come from handguns.
I think it's because they're concealable.
And I don't really know what the big benefit is. You know, many other countries have banned them. And, you know, why do we need to be able to own a gun whose only purpose is to kill people?
Well, I mean, you're making a broad sweeping statement there, but let me give Dan Baum a chance to weigh in. John, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Dan, what do you think?
If we could go back in time and ban handguns years and years and years ago, perhaps there would be some utility. Is there a social utility to handgun? People like them, but I can see where the caller would agree.
just because people like them doesn't mean everybody should have them. The problem is they last forever. So you could ban them. Banning things that large numbers of Americans want never works. There are also hundreds of millions of guns out there already, so a ban isn't going to work. However, there are things that places have done that have radically reduced handgun deaths. New York City has very stiff penalties for carrying a gun, an illegal gun, and the important thing in New York, well, so does Chicago, and Chicago has a very high rate of gun death. New York has a very low rate. What makes New York different is the punishment is certain. In Chicago, it's not. In New York City, young men know if they get caught carrying a gun, they are going to prison. And it has worked. So I think we have to accept these things exist. They're out there. There's really not much we can do about the hundreds of millions of guns that are out there now, except adjust how we treat the behavior around them in such a way that we actually get the results that we want. And it can be done. I started my career writing a book about drug prohibition. I have an instinctive aversion to bans. I don't think they work. I think they're kind of un-American. And they're kind of useless. But that's not to say that there is nothing we can do. There is a lot we can do. And I should say there is a lot we have done. I mean, handgun violence in the United States is half of what it was 20 years ago. So we are actually making progress. And we need to recognize that and look at what it is we've done. This is 20 years in which the number of guns in America has skyrocketed, gun ownership has gone way up, gun laws have gotten way looser, and yet gun crime is half of what it was. I think we need to examine what is it we've done that has worked well and keep doing it.
Well, on that note, Dan Baum, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. He's an author, a gun owner, and he has a book to be published sometime later this year called Gun Guys, A Road Trip, and we tracked him down in Las Vegas where he was at the gun show. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and find out more about this program. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for those phone calls as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.